Hi, I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess, and we're the Rambling Ravenpuffs.
Because Potterheads are far too nuanced to be shoved into just one Hogwarts house.
Each week, we will cover two chapters in the saga of our favorite boy wizard.
All the while exploring literary themes, tarot card exercises, and even fanfic speculations.
To connect with us, your fabulous host, and other listeners, join our Facebook group, the Ravenpuff Common Room, and on Instagram at the Rambling Ravenpuffs.
And to support the podcast and gain access to exclusive bonus features, consider joining our Patreon page at patreon.com/therambling ravenpuffs, all lowercase.
Thank you for tuning in. Grab your butterbeer and enjoy the show.
Welcome again to the Rambling Ravenpuffs. Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess.
And today we're discussing chapters 9 and 10 of The Prisoner of Azkaban, Grim Defeat and the Marauder's Map. In these chapters, unlike myself and Jess, the Dementors really like Quidditch.
Yes, they do. They are on the field, ready to play.
And we are exposed to one of the most iconic magical items in the entire series.
Ooh. Oh, the Marauder's Map. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. All right. That makes total sense.
So basically, Chapter 9 picks off right after the finishing of Chapter 8, where Dumbledore and the teachers have huddled all of the students into the Great Hall.
Yeah, because we're still dealing with the torn up canvas, and the Fat Lady has run off into another picture while this all kind of shakes out.
Yep. And so they have to keep all the kids congregated into one area while they search the castle.
Yeah, and they don't really have a lot of luck here, but I don't know. So we just kind of learn about the extra security measures that are going to be taken place to protect Harry. And basically a teacher is going to be following him around everywhere he goes. In addition to that, he almost doesn't get to play Quidditch. But we talked about
So Harry, Ron, and Hermione, they get their sleeping bags and drag them into a corner. And they're theorizing, how could he have possibly gotten in? How do you think he got in, Jess?
Well, they rule out apparating, which I didn't even think about that. But I think if I'm kind of going to go off of what happens later, or what we're led to believe happens later, that somebody on the inside helped him get in. Because he had to make it past Dementors. He had to make it past some, you know, Hogwarts heavy security. And kind of what Hermione talks about, that the castle's protected by more than just walls. So I think it was somebody on the inside.
So you believe in Severus's theory?
I don't know. Right now, that's the best. I mean, to me, that's the best way that we could assess. I don't think it's Lupin, but maybe I'll eat my words here. But I'm not going to ask you what you think, because you already know.
So. No, of course I do. Dumbledore just says, I do not believe a single person inside this castle would have helped Black enter it, said Dumbledore. And his tone made it so clear that the subject was closed.
Yeah, I don't know. Dumbledore, I love you, but sometimes I think people are a little... Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I'm excited to find out.
And so the school talked of nothing but Sirius Black for the next few days. The theories about how he entered the castle became wilder and wilder. Hannah Abbott from Hufflepuff spent much of the next herbology class telling anyone who'd listen that Black could turn into a flowering shrub.
Okay, that's a little much. I don't think that's the case.
If you could turn into a flower, what would you be?
If I could turn into a flower? Oh, I would be an orchid.
Why did I know? How did I know?
I don't know, but yeah. I feel like that's a good one. How about you?
Yeah, my husband's favorite is the orchid. If I would be a calla lily.
Aw, pretty. I like a calla lily.
I tried so desperately to plant them in my home in Oregon, and the deer ate them.
Oh man, the deer are cute, but don't eat plants.
Yeah, lilies, those kind of slap roses, it's basically deer candy.
Oh, I didn't know that. I don't, if a deer was this far into where I live in the city, that would be a problem. But you live in a place where, well, and you're talking about where you used to live. But
yeah, where deer were rampant.
Yeah. Oh, well, I'll tell you what, I've tried to keep orchids and I've not been very successful. So
my husband needs to give you tips.
Yes, he does, because I love them. They're so pretty. I guess the only other thing I would think is lavender, but that's not really a flower. I don't know. I'm sticking with an orchid.
Or basil. I love basil so much.
Oh, basil's a good one, too.
Yeah. And so a few days after all of this brouhaha goes down and the castle is searched, they don't find Diddly Squat.
No, it's kind of, they don't even, I mean, obviously they don't find him, but it's just kind of, like, nothing happens, so...
And it's just interesting. It's just interesting because you would think there'd be a wide range of sort of, like, tracking spells.
You would think that, wouldn't you? This is kind of a very puzzling situation that even their security, that they can't... You know, you think you put all the security up and there's, like, nobody has a clue, so...
That leads to the suggestion that either Sirius Black is getting in is the way he's getting in is super, super high tech or high magic or really, really low magic.
I'm going to lean on the low magic according to my supposed theory, it is, he's just got somebody being like, hey, come in. So, but anyway, I just have this feeling that I'm so wrong, but that's okay.
You know that he is the dog. In kind of quote-unquote, like, evading capture, that kind of... It's more the sense of, even as a dog, how is he getting in?
Yeah, that's a good... Because it's like, even if there's... I feel like they are aware enough that they wouldn't let a random dog just be like, oh, hey, come on into Hogwarts, but...
Yeah, or maybe it's something he can only get in as a human and then quickly transforms back into a dog. I don't know.
Yes, I... I know you know, but you're doing a good job of not leading me on. So good job.
So none of the portraits, they're so terrified of what happened to the fat lady that the only one they can get to guard Gryffindor Tower now is Sir Cadogan with his fat pony.
This was the, didn't we encounter him in the last book? And he was like, or maybe it was early in the chapter. I don't know. They're blending together. But that had the little duel. Am I thinking the right person?
Yeah, like it was earlier in this book, he was showing them to Trelawney's tower.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. And they're kind of irritated with him at this point because he keeps changing the password and kind of.
Yeah. Like he's very Arsenian in a cartoonish way.
I kind of like it. He's funny.
I like him.
Yeah.
And so afterwards, and then we get a little, as you mentioned, tidbit with Professor McGonagall.
Yeah, there's like a little bit of her saying, like, it's the love of Quidditch is just pulling against her. She's like, no, you probably shouldn't play. And then she's like, all right, well, let's just make sure somebody is present all the time. So Madam Hooch gets to hang out and watch Harry train for his Quidditch matches.
Yeah, and honestly, yeah, I don't, he got in the castle, so I don't think out in the grounds, again, as long as he's supervised, that's no better or worse than being in the castle at this point.
Yeah, at this point, it's just like, let's just watch Harry, make sure he's okay, because Sirius's presence is somewhere, but obviously the preventative measures they took previously were not working.
So in terms of, obviously, Dumbledore had to communicate with the Dementors in this search because, you know, he did not allow the Dementors in the castle while they searched, but he had to go, like, report back to them. And I'm thinking, do Dementors have a language?
That's really funny because I was trying to envision, like, the way I see the Dementors in my mind are, like, these big, you know, huge presence and, like, Dumbledore just being like, listen, guys, chill. So if they do have a language, I'm guarantee Mr. Dumbledore could speak it to them.
Yeah. So do they have a language or do they understand English? And what do they do sign language with their creepy scabbed gray hands?
I just imagine them just doing like heavy breathing. Like that's their like
Darth Vader sound.
Yeah. That's the different like inflections or their language. I don't know.
Yeah, McGonagall, it's played off as funny that you can't let go of Quidditch. But again, in reality, I don't think there's much of a difference at this point.
Yeah, I agree.
Oliver Wood gets pissed off that they've switched the schedule for Quidditch so that they're not playing Slytherin, they're going to play Hufflepuff.
I didn't quite understand this, and maybe it's just me, I don't know, maybe I just the words blurred in front of me, but it was like the Slytherin team backed out, right? They didn't want to play because of the conditions or something, or...
They're citing the reason that Malfoy is still injured because of the Buckbeak incident. But most of them are in agreement that this is just a cover because they don't want to play in the thunderstorm.
Which, I mean, like, they're putting... I have a question about that. Apparently nobody has a problem playing in a thunderstorm other than the Slytherins at this point. But I'm like... I guess this all goes back to the fact that the hospital wing and physical injury isn't like that big of a deal in this world, because I just can imagine one of those kids gets struck by lightning pretty quick. I don't know.
Yeah, which again, the fact that bodily harm can be so easily healed makes Draco's milking of this even more egregious and outrageous than it would be just in our world.
Right, that's very true.
Because it's not even that Malfoy is trying to say, like, oh, like, you know, something poisonous. Like, there's nothing poisonous or venomous about Buckbeak in any way. It was purely just a gash.
Right. He's just being a little bit of a drama queen, attention seeker, all of that. All those words that Malfoy is demonstrating.
Yeah, let's see. Where are we? Go to Malfoy is like, ah, if only my arm was feeling better day before the match. Oliver's freaking out and bombarding Harry with advice to the point that he's late for defense against the dark arts. And so he's 10 minutes late and he's like, oh, I'm sorry, Professor Lupin. And it's not Lupin.
No, it's good old Snape.
The substitute.
Who is, like, I guess in the kids' minds, just thrilled that he's, you know, getting to teach a dark arts class. But as usual, he goes about the teaching in a very, very dickish way.
Yeah, it's... As I was saying before Potter interrupted, Professor Lupin has not left any record of the topics you have covered so far. You know he did.
He totally did. He's just using this as an opportunity to be a jackass to Lupin, because what is this subject that they're going to talk about?
Werewolves.
Yeah. So, I guess, you know, it's, I guess, to put together that Lupin is out. Snape was making some potion for him to, like, help him out that he guzzled down and was smoking. Obviously, like, it's almost just, like, he's just using this class as an opportunity to make fun of Professor Lupin. I don't know. It's really stupid and obnoxious thing for Snape to do.
Snape is especially nasty to Hermione.
Yeah, he is. He says, 5 points from Gryffindor, I can't do the voice, for being an insufferable know-it-all. And it made me think, like, I don't know if I've ever been in a class. Like, now, I had a bit of the girls aren't good at science, like, in my education. I'm old enough for that to have been said. But I don't know if I ever sat there and heard a teacher call somebody an insufferable know-it-all or just something like that. Like, even that was a little much, so.
And it's especially, to me, it's also a degree of self-loathing because, you know, I try to imagine Snape as a kid. And while he may not have been like Hermione in every demeanor, by what we know of him as an adult, you can pretty much guess that he was a nerd.
Yeah, he's... Yes, and he seems to be wearing those scars, like, into adulthood, too.
So the fact that he, you know, puts down Hermione so much, you know, it's just, ugh.
It just seems so petty and embarrassing for an adult man to be, like, so mean to children.
And I'm just wondering that if Snape was in another profession, would he be like this? Like, could he get away with being this way? Like, and what is it, and how pathetic it is that he is this way because he deals with children day in and day out.
I think you're right. You know, like, I feel like I know people that it's like, oh, if you went somewhere else, you wouldn't get away with this type of behavior. And he's just at a place where they're just, they kind of let it slide. I'm not quite sure why. I feel like, you know, Dumbledore being who he is, there's got to be a reason. There's got to be more to it. But
yeah, because I don't know. If he was in a normal job where his coworkers were, like, again, dealing primarily with adults, he would have gotten punched in the face.
Absolutely. Absolutely. He would have at least had, like, a conversation would be had. So.
Yeah. Well, 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 I never thought I'd meet a third year class who wouldn't even recognize a werewolf when they saw one.
Ugh. Yeah, he's laying it on. I feel like this is just, you know, the kids, it seems like they're very confused because they're like, we've skipped like four magical creatures or whatever, and we're jumping straight to these werewolves. And, Snape is like, we're going to talk about werewolves, so.
And it's just funny, the fact that he calls her insufferable know-it-all, but it's funny the kid's response, because, you know, every one of them had called Hermione a know-it-all at least once, and Ron, who told Hermione she was a know-it-all at least twice a week. So it's like, she's a bitch, but she's our bitch.
That's, yeah, it's like you have, I guess it's like family or friends or something. Like, it's like, I can talk shit about this person, but if anybody else does, you know, it's trouble. So I think that they're having that moment. Yeah, like you said, she's our know-it-all. Don't do this, Snape.
Yes, and to the point that Ron cannot contain himself and talks back to the point, and Snape gives him detention.
Of course he does. Of course he's like, I didn't realize that that was like the extreme of, I mean, I guess other than being expelled, which you're probably not going to do that very as quickly. But the last time they got detention was when they were polishing, when he was puking up slugs, right? And that was something defending Hermione as well.
Yeah, well, he actually, that wasn't committed in front of teachers. His punishment was just the slugs backfiring. It was about the car thing, and he was,
oh, like, yes.
And he was shining the trophies.
Okay, yes, 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 yes. I knew he had to do some sort of, like, detention activity, so, okay, I remember now. My memory's short.
Very poorly explained. That is incorrect. The cap is more commonly found in Mongolia. Professor Lupin gave this 8 out of 10. I wouldn't have given it 3.
What is Snape looking for in this essay? I thought this was a bit intense. He said, you will each write an essay to be handed in to me on the ways you recognize and kill werewolves. I want 2 rolls of parchment on the subject, and I want them by Monday morning. It is time somebody took this class in hand. And then Weasley, stay by. We need to talk about your detention. But, okay, again, we know Lupin is a werewolf.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's like, real amped to talk to his class about how to recognize and kill werewolves. It's like, what is going on here, dude? You've got some real anger issues. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. So yes, this will all be explained.
I'm sure it will.
And then the next big sequence is, of course, the Quidditch match.
Yes. Which I have learned that as much as I just want to breeze over the Quidditch match, sometimes some stuff goes down during the Quidditch match. So this is a pretty
up until pretty this intense. Point, all the Quidditch matches have had plot points like Harry being thrown off the broom, the Bludger going crazy, and now this.
Right. Exactly. It's like, okay, I've just got to get through some of it. But there's some really big things that happen in this particular match.
Yeah. And we get the introduction of Cedric Diggory, which is kind of the quote-unquote Hufflepuff heartthrob.
I mean, I feel the same way about Robert Pattinson. I think he's gorgeous. So I'm totally get it. But yes, yeah, I know his fate because I know that's a big deal. But it's interesting to have him introduced here. And he does good by Harry. Typical Hufflepuff fashion here later on.
Indeed. And so, yeah, we will breeze through all the Quidditch beforehand. What's the first important thing that happens?
It's those Dementors, right?
Right, before the Dementors.
Before the Dementors. That's like Harry kind of blacks out, is that right? Or
the big black dog.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So obviously, Sirius Black is chilling at the Quidditch Master. Nobody knows it, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So first we get the big black dog, Sirius Black, is just chilling in the bleachers.
I mean, you know, nice to have a... Why didn't anybody question this? Like, don't random animals show up at Quidditch Masters? I feel like somebody should be like... But I guess he's kind of off into the distance, right? I mean...
Yeah, well, I think the idea he's in a certain tower of bleachers that is unoccupied by everyone else, and so no one's looking that way.
Okay. Yeah. Still weird, but...
Yeah. And okay. Then everything starts to go cold again.
So, yes, we know that everything is telling us without telling us yet that the Dementors have descended or ascended. I don't remember. Probably ascended, come up to the Quidditch match because they just can't resist all these excited people.
Mm-hmm. And Harry, beyond that, he hears something more in his head beyond a woman screaming.
Yes. Are we going to that route now? Or because I'm like, I didn't know if you were going to read because it's his mother screaming in his head.
Yeah. Not Harry, not Harry. Please, not Harry. Stand aside, you silly girl. Stand aside now. Not Harry. Please, no. Take me. Kill me instead.
Yeah. And then he kind of blacks out, but he doesn't know who this voice is for quite, especially right now. He's got the, you know, the Dementors and then this terrible scene playing out in his mind.
Yeah, he puts it together in the next chapter, but...
Right.
But for now, yeah, he just totally blacks out. He was just falling.
Yeah, scary.
And luckily the ground was so soft.
That he... Yeah, so he, but he still ends up in the hospital wing, which, you know, obviously that's, he fell maybe like 50 feet, they say?
Yeah, 50. Like, I don't know what the, like, again, I don't know how much far you have to fall for, like, the energy of the impact to kill you. But clearly his magic can absorb the shock.
Yeah, a little bit of damage, but enough to take him to the hospital wing, but not enough to, like, completely get rid of him. So, but here's where, like I said, Diggory shows his, like, Hufflepuff colors. They're kind of explaining what happened to Harry and said, Diggory got the snitch just after you fell. He didn't realize what happened. When he looked back and saw you on the ground, he tried to call it off. Wanted a rematch, but they won fair and square. Even Wood admits it. Even though Wood is apparently like having a meltdown because of this loss. Yes.
Yeah, it's, again, Quidditch is so unregulated.
Yeah, really. It's just, you know, who survival.
There could be a clause that if unforeseen Dementors appear on the premises.
That, yeah, I wonder how many Quidditch matches have been interrupted by Dementors. Probably not a lot.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's why I get so, you know, frustrated with rules and bureaucracy, because I'm so much a person who I want the spirit of the rule or law to count, not the letter of it.
The great debate. I feel like I have dealt with that in my work life so much, dealing with the things that I do. It's like somebody wants to interpret the spirit, somebody wants to do the letter, and it's just like, oh my God. Yeah. So I'm with you, team spirit. That's how I feel.
Yeah, well, that's my dad's biggest cultural beef, like when he transitioned, once he got out of the military back into the civilian world, because it seems, at least his experience in the Air Force in the 70s and 80s, was that, you know, it was much more a spirit mentality where as long as you had a good story and it had a logical flow to it, it was, you pretty much could get it approved. It wasn't what my dad describes as this civilian, like, you don't have to think, so we're just going to follow these bureaucracies and we're not going to, like, critically think in any way.
That is, and that is the reason I think so many people are very much want the black and white, because they don't have to think, and it makes things easier, quote unquote, that way. You couldn't see me do quotes. But I'm thinking about work experiences that I've had, and people want very specific documentation, and it's just like, that's just not how this specific thing works. So, but anyway.
Yeah, Dumbledore was really angry, Hermione said in a quaking voice. I'd never seen him like that before. He ran onto the field as you fell, waved his wand, and you sort of slowed down before you hit the ground. Then he whirled his wand at the Dementors, shot silver stuff at them. They left the stadium right away. He was furious they'd come onto the grounds.
That obviously made an impression, and kind of like the Zen, like Buddhist that we kind of have seen Dumbledore be so far, that's been my perception. So like he really hit his limit like here. We already know he is not a fan of the Dementors, but then to have them disrupt something that obviously the kids are enjoying and the teachers enjoy, completely torn apart by these things, is obviously just put him through the roof.
Yeah. And it makes me think of, again, my fanfic speculations from chapter 5, The Dementor, where I pose, like, what if the Dementors had caused more harm to Harry? Harry fell off his broom because of these things. Like, I wish Dumbledore would use this as a premise for they aren't helping and they're endangering the one kid that the guy you want is going against.
Right, yeah. So whose side are they on, really? You know, like, they're, that kind of begs that question because of the havoc they kind of wreaked.
Yeah, unless the Dementors had some super extra power that they're, like, holding, you know, otherwise, we don't know how it is, but clearly Dementors are not effective on Sirius Black.
No, they are not. They let him hang out and watch a Quidditch match as a dog. I guess that must be, like, the best power to be, to change into an animal.
Mm-hmm. What would you change into if you had to?
Oh my gosh, this is a difficult question.
Yeah, well, we did flowers, we got to do.
Yeah, critters. I think I'd want to be a Black Panther. I think that would be cool. Yeah, what about you?
Oh, I do like ravens, but I don't think I'm a bird. I think I'd want to be a horse.
Oh,
because I love horses.
I think that would be beautiful. I was about to say a bunny because I love bunnies, but then I was like, I'm just electing to be like the easiest prey ever. So I'll go with Black Panther.
Yeah. Oh my God. It's been so long since I've seen a little bunny for Hufflepuff the raccoon and everyone else who visits me.
Oh, yeah.
Did I tell you the true marker of summer was a hummingbird flew into my house?
Oh my gosh. That's exciting.
And this wasn't even the first or even the third time it had happened.
You must have something red in there that they like or something.
Well, we have the hummingbird feeder close to the door to the back balcony. And sometimes in summer we leave the door open so the cats go in and out. And so sometimes they'll just fly in and we have a high vaulted ceiling. And so it takes forever to get them.
Aw, poor little guys.
We just have to wait for them to tire out and fall to the ground and catch them, and then catch them before the cats get it.
That sounds less cute and more of like
an operation.
Yeah, right.
Like,
yeah.
I remember I caught this one coming from down the wall, and you know, I felt he was in my palm, and his little heart was beating so fast.
They are those poor little things. They really do. They're just little hearts.
Anyway,
Godspeed to the flying hummingbirds.
I digress. So instead of Poe with his raven tap, tap, tapping, I get the hummingbirds tap, tap, tapping.
I mean, cool. Ravens are cool. Hummingbirds are a lot cuter. So
yeah. Anyway, I digress. So, and then the final piece of info we got, like, where's my broom?
Yes, this was the second devastating thing in this situation. What I would qualify as a big thing is the Nimbus was destroyed by the Whomping Willow.
And just completely smashed it to smithereens.
RIP Nimbus. I know you'll get an upgrade, though, because you're Harry Potter. So.
Yeah. It's sad. You know, because McGonagall gave him that broom.
Right, right.
Because she's the closest thing he has to a mom at this point, except for Molly Weasley, maybe.
Yeah, a little bit of a...
She's more like a... she's more a stern Quidditch gambling addicting aunt.
Equally cool, I guess. Yeah.
And then we go on to chapter 10, The Marauder's Map. Madame Pomfrey insisted on keeping Harry in the hospital wing for the rest of the weekend. He didn't argue or complain, but he wouldn't let her throw away the shattered remnants of his Nimbus 2000.
This made me think of sometimes there's like a broken thing or something that I've kept just for a little too long because I'm like, this just has something, you know, it's like pulling at my heart a little bit. And then eventually you kind of, you go like, do I need to keep this broken coffee mug around? Probably not. And I think Harry's dealing with the same thing because he said he felt like he'd lost one of his best friends.
And everyone came to visit him. They gave him flowers. Ginny Weasley gave him a get well card that sang shrilly unless Harry kept it shut under his bowl of fruit.
Interesting choice there, Jenny.
Wood finally makes an appearance and tells Harry it's not his fault, albeit in a hollow, dead sort of voice.
Yeah, he's pretty tore up about this whole loss, which I guess I understand.
Yeah. But nothing anyone said or did could make Harry feel any better because they knew only half of what was troubling him.
Right. So here's where he obviously kind of has had plenty of time being laid up in the hospital wing to figure out that the voice that he heard was his mother's, and it was the encounter with his mother and Voldemort.
Yeah, which, again, very disturbing, but clearly, again, the Dementors drag up that memory of when he was a year old.
So these guys are, as I think we've talked about, they're powerful. I mean, this is not nothing light. And this is also interesting to think about that we've kind of dealt with the Bogarts who, you know, are making people face their fears. And then the Dementors, which are extracting the like worst memories, are the things you don't want to think about. So interesting. Yeah.
So all these thoughts are extremely depressing, and so Harry is relieved when he finally can go back out into the hustle and bustle of the school again. Malfoy's being stupid, taunting Harry with fainting and all the other boring crap.
Yeah.
And then we get Lupin finally returns to his classes, and they're bitching about Snape.
Right, yeah. And he does a good job. He's kind of like, eh.
Whatever. You know, can we praise Lupin's professionalism?
We can, because he does an excellent job. I don't, you know, he just kind of brushes it off and is like, yeah, don't worry about it. I'll talk to him and you don't have to do the essay. So let's move on. And of course, Hermione's already done the essay, but then he just kind of goes on to the next lesson and that's it. Good on him. Good on him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Hinky Punk. That's their next lesson.
The Hinky Punk. Yeah, that's pretty funny.
And Lupin calls Harry back after class.
Yeah. So they kind of talk about what happened on the Quidditch pitch. And I think it was, I appreciated, again, points to Professor Lupin, who says, the Dementors affect you worse than others because there are horrors in your past the others don't have. So I think that if only Malfoy, you know, God knows, but he doesn't have these things that to deal with that Harry has seen. So of course it's going to be a less terrifying experience for other people. I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah. Dementors are among the foulest creatures that walk this earth. They infest the darkest, filthiest places. They glory in decay and despair. They drain peace, hope, and happiness out of the air around them. Even muggles feel their presence, though they can't see them. Get too near a Dementor and every good feeling, every happy memory will be sucked out of you. If it can, the Dementor will feed on you long enough to reduce you to something like itself, soulless and evil. You'll be left with nothing but the worst experiences of your life, and the worst that happened to you, Harry, is enough to make anyone fall off their broom. You have nothing to feel ashamed of.
I feel like there might be some Dementors hanging around my office some days. that must be what the deal is. I don't know.
Yeah, they're described in a very emotional, vampiric way. And I think it's, you know, I know you haven't read Lord of the Rings, but in a way this particular passage reminds me of the ring rates, like the Nazgul, because there is a point where Frodo gets stabbed by one of the dark hooded cloaks.
Oh.
And he gets wounded, and like Pippin asks like Aragorn, is he going to die? And he's like, he's passing into the Shadow Realm. Soon he will be a wraith like them.
Ugh, that's terrifying.
Yeah, so yeah, just kind of interesting. Yeah. Just
Yeah.
the dark hooded figure stemming from death, used a lot in literature.
Yes, it is. I think about A Christmas Carol, and I
Yeah,
mean, it
basically the ghost
depicts.
of Christmas yet to come is a Dementor.
Yes. But cool. No, I haven't read Lord of the Rings. I don't know if your reviews have encouraged me to read them, but
Yeah, actually, I am trudging through the Two Towers now just to say I read the series, the trilogy once, and Two Towers is a lot better.
okay. It might be some time, but I'll get there. I have them. I've had them for years, and just got to be in the right mood, I guess.
Yeah, so yeah, the Fellowship, again, it was a lot of building up plot, and again, the sausage fest of the Fellowship, like it was fine on screen when I watched the movies, but reading it, it's just like meh.
Yeah.
But now that the Fellowship's divided and everyone's having their own adventures, and I'm like, okay, I like this better.
Oh, okay, good. Good to know.
Anyway, I digress. We will get to Lord of the Rings at a later, several years from now in Sophie Mert Studios.
There we go. There we go.
Harry's just like, what am I supposed to do against these things? And Lupin's like, there is a charm that can drive them away, and I can teach it to you.
Yeah, and he's like, great. But then Lupin's kind of like, but not right now. We'll have to do it later. And it's like, oh, cool. Okay. So he's got to wait until after the holiday break to learn whatever that he's about to learn.
Yeah, there are a lot of funny allegories that are made with Lupin, and again, like he's knocked out several days, a month because of his condition, and comparing it to, women and,
Oh.
and their lunar cycles. So
Hey, that's fine.
it's like, yeah, so I feel like Lupin is the closest, a man has come to understanding how crappy it is that depending on how severe your symptoms are, like you can, like a whole 5 days to a week in a month can be totally
Yeah.
shot.
I think that I appreciate the progressiveness of Hogwarts for allowing somebody to cover his class, kind of giving him the time he needs. That's really, I like that analogy. I think that people should be equally as progressive with women when we, or whomever, people with uteruses, when we deal with that situation. So.
Yeah, it's. I hope this time that that Dumbledore just has McGonagall cover his classes.
Yeah, I think that's the better choice. Snape is, Snape's gonna be Snape.
The next Hogsmeade visit comes.
Yeah, so this obviously Harry's just like, well, fine, I'm just gonna sit here and read this book. And then Fred and George save the day.
Indeed. So they decide to give Harry a piece of parchment that, upon saying the words, I solemnly swear that I am up to no good, an entire detailed map of Hogwarts appears with little GPS dots on the parchment.
Old school GPS, old school tracking, right? Like old school, I whatever Google tracking thing. I can't think of the name of it, but I'm just thinking location finder.
So Messrs. Mooney, Wormtail, Padfoot, and Prongs, purveyors of aid to magical mischief makers, are proud to present the Marauder's Map.
This is an interesting little thing, a little present. I have some questions about it later on. It is going to be part of my fanfic. But they also talk, George and Fred also talk about how they obtained this, which basically they stole it from one of Filch's drawers. And I forgot what it was marked as. Oh, what is the name of it? He has it like a warning on it. And I'm guessing this was not like something Filch was like, this will be fun. It was something that he took from a student. Is that right?
Yeah, like it was labeled in a cabinet, that was confiscated and highly dangerous.
Oh, confiscated. Well, then of course. Okay.
Yeah. So their theory is that Fred and George suspect that Filch had an inkling of what it was, but didn't figure out how to properly use it. And it is a question of, you know, again, the map only appears if you say these specific words.
Yes.
And so I'm thinking, you know, there's the big question of how did Fred and George figure it out? And, you know, while they are troublemakers and they might have said this at random, my personal headcanon is that just as the map shows Harry how to, like, the word to get through the secret passage, mm-hmm. I think likewise that they could sense that Fred and George were like-minded as them and gave them the passwords.
I think that's a great explanation because I hadn't really thought about how they would have figured it out. But yeah, I think that's
last phrase, I should say.
It makes sense. Makes sense. Yeah. Well, they're gifting this to Harry so he can get into Hogsmeade because everybody knows that Harry kind of doesn't get the opportunity to go to Hogsmeade this year because he doesn't have the pass. But in reality, I think it's because of the threat of Sirius Black, who might just be hanging out with him at Hogwarts. So just let him go to freaking Hogsmeade.
With the permission slip, I'm kind of wondering if he was able to con the Dursleys into signing it, would anyone try to supersede it at this point?
That's a good question. I don't know.
Because, I don't know, if they want to try and be in stickler for the rules, how could... Yeah, I don't, they would want to, but I just would think that would they be in a position to do so?
I think that's a good question. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't
know. Anyway, so Fred and George advise Harry to go use the passageway that where the end of it ends up in the Honeyduke cellar.
Because it's kind of the best way to get to Hogsmeade without, you know, encountering the Whomping Willow or something.
Or a cavern and all things like that. And I'm just curious about the history of this secret passage because it makes me wonder, was Honeydukes there before or after? Was that building a different building before Honeydukes that had this passage? I'm just wondering why Honeydukes?
Yeah, that is a bit curious, other than it's just a cool place for kids to go. So I don't know. That's a great question. I would think that I think the connection to Hogwarts is interesting. It almost seems like it was something repurposed and Honeydukes thought here's a good business opportunity for us. But I don't know.
Yeah, because I'm not sure if it's ever explained which came first, Hogsmeade or Hogwarts, because, you know, it just seems the two are pretty related. So I can totally buy that, you know, there are multiple passageways, but yeah, I'm just curious which came first.
I don't know. That would be, I bet somebody out there, I hope somebody out there has thought about that.
And so he doesn't get his jacket. He doesn't get anything. He just goes straight to the statue of the humped witch or whatever it is.
Yeah, the one-eyed witch or something. I don't remember.
Yep, and he just slides in.
Yeah, so he just is I guess this really made his day. It also kind of shows how bummed he was. I mean, we know he's bummed, but the fact that he's just I'm not going to get anything. I'm just headed out there. So, and then on he is to Hogsmeade.
Yep, and so he shows up in the cellar. Someone comes down to get, was it, to get more jelly slugs.
Ugh, yeah.
And he sprints up the stairs and ends up behind the counter.
Yeah, yeah. And eventually he's kind of gets to see what the treats at Honeydukes are, which, and then it makes him think of Dudley kind of in a rude way, but they list all these delicious looking or sounding sweets. So which one would you go for out of the ones listed?
Oh, I'm craving chocolate just because, you know, just by nature, I, you know, don't eat as much chocolate in the summer, obviously, because it melts.
Yes.
Yeah. Cause Anna, what I think of this is there is, There's a town half an hour away from Bloomington, where I am, and it's called Nashville. And it's, again, not Nashville, Tennessee, Nashville, Indiana. It's this cute little like artsy town where there are a lot of artisans and artists who come together. But one of the stores, like in their little downtown, is an old school candy shop.
Oh, cool.
And yeah, so just having all the candies in those classic, jars, and it's really nice.
That makes me think of Estes Park. There are like little candy shops like that all around. I was pretty excited to read about the tiny black pepper imps that you can breathe fire for your friends. I was thinking that would be pretty cool
Yeah,
because you can be like a
I
dragon.
would want to breathe fire, but I wouldn't want to do pepper for it. I just never like those cinnamon or peppery flavors, and just wasn't my thing.
Not for you. I
The
totally get
sugar
that.
spun quills, like I may like I imagine that like kind of tasting like cotton candy.
Oh yeah, that sounds. I think the least appealing to me is the ice mice because I don't like that. Just is really disturbing to me. It's not very fun. It's like more distressing than it is fun.
Like, I wonder how you would make a magical, like a super sour sweet.
Ooh, do you like sour things?
I
Are you?
do.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like sour Skittles or like those sour punch straws. Those are my favorite.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
New
that's
raspberry sour punch straws.
my husband likes sour beer, and that's not something that I'm into. So it's hard for me to share in a sour beer with him, but it's a big thing in brewing, so
Yep.
good for
And
that.
so he comes upon Ron and Hermione as they are examining a tray of blood-flavored lollipops.
Love it. Love a mention of a vampire. We all know this about, I think, Amy and I. So that was pretty exciting to see vampires noted. But here, I don't know why they're considering this. And Hermione is like, no, he wouldn't. They're not. He's not a vampire. Like, come on.
I'm assuming that they saw, oh, maybe it's cherry or strawberry, and then they
Oh.
look at the label.
Ugh. It's a good thing they didn't buy that one without like really thinking about it.
Yeah,
But
and then how about these, said Ron, shoving a jar of cockroach clusters under Hermione's nose. And the cockroach clusters, like that's, people are starting to like sell fry and sell the cicadas.
oh my God, what is wrong with I'm okay, I've said this. What is wrong with people? I'm a vegetarian. We don't have to eat everything. Like, let's just chill. Oh
Yeah,
my
like
God.
as much as it would be environmentally friendly for us as a culture to pick up insects, I cannot bring myself to do it yet.
Yeah, I'll eat blades of grass before I do that. So, no thanks. Not for me.
Harry scares the bejesus out of Ron and Hermione, and Ron,
Yeah.
wow, you learned to apparate.
And Hermione's like, or Harry shuts that down pretty quick. Like, no, I haven't. Come on. Like, and then he told him about the map.
This is an interesting question. How come Fred and George never gave it to me? Said Ron, outraged. I'm their brother.
Probably for that reason. I don't know.
Like,
Siblings are weird.
so I love Fred and George, but in terms of, again, a lot of insecurities that Ron has, in my head canon, I put a lot of the blame on Fred and George.
Oh, really? Just from like giving him a bad time all the
Yeah, giving him a
time?
hard time and not appreciating clearly how sensitive Ron is, because the Fred and George are the closest to him in age.
Okay.
And yeah, like again, pranking him and like things like that. So it's clear that Fred and George and Ron, I don't think, have the closest relationship, and it's just made worse. So yeah, like in some, obviously Harry's protagonist, he has to have the map, but it would have been nice if they had given it to Ron.
Yeah, it would have. And it is strange, but I don't know. I don't know. I have one sibling, so I don't understand all the weirdness that goes on with big families, or not weirdness, but things that happen. So, I think I agree with you. I think that Hermione, though, expresses like all of our concern. Like, what about Sirius Black? What are you doing here, buddy? And then Harry kind of shuts it down a little bit.
Yeah. And so And I'm just curious, like, again, why didn't Harry bring the invisibility cloak? Because...
Oh, yes. That was totally my fan fiction, too. Well, anyway, don't know why. We'll get to that.
Because I'm just thinking, like, even if they did not, what's coming up, you know, meeting with the hiding from the professors, like, other kids are there and can see him. It's like, oh, yeah, I saw Harry. And the professor's like, you saw who?
Right, yeah. Like, why didn't he? I guess he was just so excited that he just could not wait another second to think logically, grab the invisibility cloak, and get out of there. But
So they explore a little, and they describe that Hogsmeade basically looks like a Christmas card and is so cute.
I know. I just want to go there. It's hot as hell out right now.
The temperature outside right now?
Oh my God. We have the, I guess you all probably do too, humidity there. I think it's like 95 right now.
We're pretty humid too. We're actually not that bad. We're at 81.
Ugh. Yeah. We're 94.
No, but my air conditioner is leaking.
Oh no.
It's leaking through like one of the light fixtures.
Ooh. Oh no.
Which is not good.
No.
Like, the light turns on and off. Like, it's not damaged yet, but, like, literally, and it's totally random when it'll start leaking, because, you know, we have it on pretty consistently.
Yeah.
Because it's gotten warm. But we, like, literally have to, like, right under that light fixture, we put, like, a flower vase to, like,
oh,
all the water.
Whoa.
And I'm supposed to have a dinner party this Friday, so, like, and the contractor still hasn't contacted me to set up an appointment to fix it.
Oh my goodness. I'd be like, dude, come on. Help me out. You got people coming over. Goodness.
Yeah. Okay. What got me on this rant?
We were talking about the Christmas card and how hot it was.
Oh yeah. How hot it was. So they ultimately vote to go to the Three Broomsticks.
Yeah, to go drink some butterbeer, which is very, I know what butterbeer is. I've seen a lot of recipes on Pinterest for butterbeer.
Yeah, I haven't looked at them in detail. My understanding that it was just some sort of like caramel sort of creamy.
Yeah, like butterscotchy kind of drink. That's kind of, but I thought it was interesting because they're talking about it and it says Harry drank it deeply. It was the most delicious thing he had ever tasted and seemed to heat every bit of him from the inside. Which sounds just lovely. Not right now because it's hot, but like on a cold day. Sounds great.
And then who should appear in the Three Broomsticks but Professor McGonagall, Flitwick, Hagrid, and the minister himself, Cornelius Fudge.
Dun, dun, dun. So Harry has got to duck out because, like you said, you know, kids seeing him, like, that's silly enough. But here he is out and about with the professors and powers that be at the same location as he is.
And it's so funny that Hermione enchants one of the Christmas trees to, like, levitate and, like, scoot sideways to hide them.
Oh, it's yes.
It's just so funny. Like, did you ever see that animated film that Disney made, The Sword and the Stone?
Oh, man. So long ago. I've seen it, but I was, like, I'm old and I remember it from when I was a kid.
Yeah, like, I remember when I was a kid, too. And there's a funny scene where Merlin is, like, about to sit down, and he wiggles his finger, and a chair, like, scoots over, like, you know, magically for him to sit down. But the music that it plays during that is, like, this little clarinet. And so I just imagine the Christmas tree to that music, just, like, scooting in front of their table.
That's cute. I think that sounds perfect. That's pretty funny.
And then we get the big plot drop.
Oh, yeah. This is quite... I mean, we're not just talking about the drinks that everybody orders, because I was kind of fascinated by that. But
yes, I actually wrote that down. Like, what do all the drinks say about the characters' personalities?
That is kind of what my thinking was. I don't know what Gillywater is. Moldmead. Yeah, I don't know. This is all...
I'm the closest to a Flitwick. A cherry syrup and soda with ice and umbrella.
That's what I... That sounds lovely. Yeah, I don't know what gilly water is. I'm kind of curious. To me, it's like a gin and tonic, but I don't know why that's what it is in my mind. So that's what I would go for.
Because the cherry syrup and soda just reminds me of, there was this one, when I lived in Oklahoma, there was this one cafe called Michelangelo's that my husband and I love to go to and just work and study. And they were the only cafe that made really decent Italian sodas.
Oh, man, a good Italian soda is...
Yeah, and so I would just alternate between like blackberry, blueberry, cherry, raspberry.
Oh, that sounds, you're making me thirsty. I want one of those.
But yeah, big plot drop. So like, what did you know and what didn't you know?
I would say I didn't know a lot about this. I knew that Sirius was involved in some capacity with the Potters, but I did not know how deep. I did not know that he and James were like buds. I didn't know that, you know, that is where Hagrid got his motorcycle. Maybe I did know that. Now let me take that back. But the complexities that they talk about here, I did not know this. I didn't know that it is assumed that Sirius led Voldemort to the Potters. There are some big accusations that get made here. I don't know the truth to them or not, but the perception of Sirius's involvement with the Potters is pretty jarring, especially for Harry to overhear and just kind of have to digest. Also, just saying, kind of weird that they're just like talking about this really openly, but I guess, you know, whatever, that's what people do. Go and have a beverage and...
They are in a pub in a small village in the middle of Scotland.
It's just, I guess the thing that I'm curious about in the wizarding world is the alcohol age. I mean, I know that doesn't make any sense, but the fact that like the kids would be there, and I know they're not like 10 years old anymore. I know they're like 13, and you know, the professors would be there. And this conversation would be so open because it's the professors obviously know the students are there for a Hogsmeade weekend, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's just like, I think so for some of us in the nonprofit world, we have a annual meeting. So that just brings in like everybody that I work with. And one of our general rules in the office, like working with these people, is don't talk about people in the elevator, in the whatever, be careful in restaurants because people are from this like conference are everywhere and they'll hear you. So anyway, I don't know.
My town is small enough where before you start talking crap, you need to look over your shoulder.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, I guess a Christmas tree is blocking like the Golden Trio, but still, I mean, you know.
Yeah, well, again, it's hard to imagine, like, again, how this whole, like, sitting area and the tables are structured. Because, like, in some restaurants I've been in, you could kind of make the argument that, okay, they are in the very, very back, and the only people in the back with them are Ron and Harry, and they're covered by the tree.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. But, anyway. So, yeah, we get the whole spiel that Sirius Black is Harry Potter's godfather.
Yeah, that's a big reveal too.
And Hagrid mentioned Black in, you know, the first book.
Yes.
Sirius gave me his motorcycle.
Yes. Okay. Yes, yes, yes.
And Hagrid's just like, you know, imagine if I had given Harry to him.
Yeah, Hagrid's pretty, not a fan of Mr. Black.
Yeah, to just summarize, so basically the Potters knew they were being targeted. They went into hiding, and to ensure the secrecy of their whereabouts, they invoked what is called the Fidelis Charm, which Professor Flitwick is conveniently there to explain this very obscure branch of magic in the middle of a pub, again, in the middle of nowhere in Scotland.
Yes.
Basically, that the only person who, the secret keeper, is the only person who can tell the secret. Otherwise, it's magically enchanted where you can never find out that information.
I guess, like, that makes sense. I didn't know we always needed a spell for it, but that's fine. I guess it protects against, like, torture or something.
Yeah, I think the point is that even if a person, like, like breaks mentally or physically, there's a magical enchantment where even if they try to say it, it'll like garble out or be mumbled, like no, it'll be incomprehensible.
Well, cool. I know that's a pretty cool little charm.
And so, yeah, Sirius was the secret keeper and sold his best friend and his wife and their son to Lord Voldemort.
Yeah, so what was his motivation? And I don't know if I have a clear understanding of that quite yet, if this is actually what happened.
Alrighty then. So it just goes more into, again, what we already knew. He killed three people. We get a new character that's thrown into this. Peter Pettigrew.
Yes, Peter Pettigrew,
Who was the one wizard of the dozen muggles that was killed in the explosion?
And who does he remind us of? Colin Creevy. That's who he reminded me of. Because he was kind of following Sirius and James around, and they were kind of like, I don't know. It was kind of, it just reminded me of Colin Creevy and his kind of admiration for Harry.
So, yeah, it seems that Peter Pettigrew was kind of in the gang with Sirius and James, but not so much. It was more an act of, quote, I guess, quote unquote, charity rather than, him being of the same magical or charismatic caliber as James and Sirius themselves.
Right.
And even McGonagall says, like, he was, so. He never was good at dueling. He should have left it to the ministry. Like, I was very hard on him and I regret that.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Poor McGonagall. And she's obviously very upset by this recalling this story.
Yeah, and Fudge admits I was junior minister in the Department of Magical Catastrophes at the time, and I was one of the first on the scene after Black murdered all those people. I will never forget it. I still dream about it sometimes. A crater in the middle of the street, so deep it had cracked the sewer below. Bodies everywhere, Muggles screaming, and Black standing there, laughing with what was left of Pettigrew in front of him, a heap of blood-stained robes and a few fragments.
And here we go again with the gore and Harry Potter, but it's like they stop before it goes just too far. I mean, bodies everywhere and a heap of bloodstained robes is pretty dark.
Yeah, and then they speculate on, like, what do you think he's broken out to do? Said Madame McMurdo. Good gracious, minister. He isn't trying to rejoin you know who, is he? I dare say that his eventual plan. But we hope to catch Black long before that.
So they really do think his motive. I guess going after Harry is kind of would be a way to show allegiance to.
Show allegiance and maybe, again, this was the kid that defeated my master. There's no point even trying to assist my master unless this his nemesis is taken out.
Right. Okay. Ooh, it's pretty dark, but I guess I don't know. That's must be the power of Voldemort.
Yeah. And then they finally shuffle out all the teachers and the minister, and Hermione's like, Harry. Ron and Hermione's faces appeared under the table. They were both staring at him, lost for words.
Yeah, that was quite the information dump for Mr. Potter to hear. Also for Ron and Hermione, because now they know like some it's new information about their friend, new to him, and then new to them too. So it was not like a it what started off as a light, fun day at Hogsmeade turned to pretty dark, as things are wont to do in Harry Potter.
In Harry Potter, indeed. Speaking of the dark, shall we move on to Gothic Geek Out?
Yes, we should.
Yes, so what did you come up with?
It is hard for me to not, whenever the Dementors have a presence in these chapters, to not pick them. So I went with the Dementors. Doesn't get more gothic. I feel like I've said that before, but they're pretty good gothic, even to kind of envelop somebody in basically a gothic novel in a way. Sadness, whatever, drama. So boring, but I'm going with the Dementors. How about you?
The new secret passageway that is discovered.
Oh, okay. That's yeah.
Yeah,
That's fun.
because Again, as we've talked about, the Dementors are much more in a modern horror sense than the like traditional architectural Gothic sense, whereas this is kind of going back, backtracking into, oh yeah, there is a castle that has tons of secret passageways, and it has seven overall, and even the caretaker only knows four of them.
Right. Yeah. So that I think that's yeah, that is a very good traditional Gothic secret passageways. Makes me think of Otranto, I think.
Then I'm just trying to think anything else, really. Just the past of we get this whole info dump about the past.
Right. Yeah, that's very Gothic-y. That is the way it's told, kind of in a pub with some friends over drinks. Like, I don't know why that reminds me of Game of Thrones, even though I've only watched the show, but there's some, I don't know, that feels a little bit kind of
Well, I yeah, and
Gothic.
I've read more than my fair share of like Gothic novels where like the newcomer comes into the old English or Scottish town and they're like having dinner or a pint of ale at the pub, and then they listen in on the local gossip or local legends to like get that starts the foundation of their information of the mystery.
All right. So I wasn't too far off with the gothicness of that scene either.
Alrighty then. So now we move on to the card of the day. I picked it beforehand. And it's a very appropriate card this time. It is the Lightning Struck Tower.
Oh, the tower. Okay.
The tower, which is one of the most, probably you, again, I could sense the recognition in your voice. It is one of the most well-known tarot cards within the major arcana.
Because it means a time of big transformation, right? You can go ahead and read that instead of me speculating, but I think I have some sort of like feel for what it is.
Yeah. When the Tower card appears in a tarot reading, expect the unexpected. Massive change, upheaval, destruction, and chaos. It may be a divorce, death of a loved one, financial failure, health problems, natural disaster, job loss, or any event that shakes you to your core, affecting you spiritually, mentally, and physically. There's no escaping it. Change is here to tear things up, creating chaos and destroy everything in its path.
Ooh, not the lightest of cards.
No.
I think that we could apply this to the scene at the Three Broomsticks, where Harry learns all the information about his past.
Indeed, and like the next line is just when you think you're safe and comfortable having your butter beer and Hogsmeade, a tower moment hits and throws you for a loop. A lightning bolt of clarity and insight cuts through the lies and illusions that you have been telling yourself, and now the truth comes to light.
High drama. This card is all about the drama and all about secrets revealed. So,
Yeah, and a lot of times, the card is sometimes just called the tower, but and then other times it's called the lightning struck tower because usually there's a bolt of lightning to in the image of the card traditionally. And that just made me think of, the storm and the Quidditch match.
Oh yeah, that's a great point.
And the fact that, again, the massive change or disruption to the Dementors coming to the Quidditch match and Harry's, falling flat on the ground.
Right, and there was every kind of reason that they would probably win, or at least the match would be interesting because of the new Quidditch player on Hufflepuff, but did not play out like that.
Yeah, and then, yeah, the best way forward is to let this structure self-destruct so you can rebuild and refocus.
Hard thing to do, but
Well,
one of the
that made me
options.
think of Let It Be Destroyed. It makes me think of the Nimbus 2000 getting destroyed.
Yes, that's a good yes. Because obviously he needs a new broomstick now, but
Because can't do we want to go into the symbolism of the destroyed broomstick? Being a segment of his innocence, or like living, like knowing that his parents were, murdered and stuff, and then having to actually, vicariously relive it again.
Yeah, it's just like it's been this thing that's known about him for a long time. It's kind of, it's always followed him, but I don't know if he's ever really understood the story. And now he's getting more and he's more and more pieces of the story are coming together for him specifically. The Dementors casting their little you know, spell, not really a spell, but kind of their presence over him, making him relive the scene, how the scene came about. I think that's a great analogy, the destruction of innocence. This is Texas and me coming out. Innocence and kind of, you know, now he has to kind of build from all this information. Like, what does he do now?
Yeah, and then there's something to be said about, like, him finding out about how close his Sirius Black was to his parents is one thing, but then also having to on another level, understanding the true ramification of Black's betrayal by having the Dementors to make him relive his mother's death.
Yeah, nasty creatures.
Well, that's all I can think of, but yeah, Tower, very apropos.
I agree. The Tower is a... Glad it was pulled for this chapter.
Alrighty then. And I also picked a rune beforehand, and it's known as Mothnas.
Okay.
Which is, again, corresponds to the letter M. And keywords are humanity, the self, support, assistance, intelligence, family. Mothnas is the rune of humankind and symbolizes the characteristics that set humanity apart from the rest of Earth's living creatures, the ability to create for the sake of creativity itself, to develop and contribute to culture, to read and write, etc. This rune reminds us that we are part of a shared experience among all humans, no matter our specific language, physical appearance, or beliefs. At the same time, Mothnas represents the self, with particular emphasis on one's inner being. Often this rune is pointing to some aspect of tension in the relationship between your inner self and your perceived place in the outer world. You may feel at odds with the attitudes and expectations of society. If this is the case, be sure you are listening to your intuition rather than your ego to determine the best course of action. Mothnas reminds you to maintain self-awareness, checking in with yourself physically, emotionally, and spiritually as you choose how to respond to your circumstances.
Well, the thing that stood out to me when you were reading that was talking about shared experiences and how I know that what happened to Harry's parents has very much happened to Harry, but it was also part of the world he lives in. I mean, the entity that killed Harry's parents, most of the wizarding community don't even say the name. So that shared experience of, yes, it was a murder committed against, you know, his family, but the repercussions were felt throughout the entire wizarding world.
Mm-hmm. What I thought of when I was reading it is, again, the idea of like maintaining self-awareness and like responding, not reacting. That reminded me of the scene of, you know, both together Harry with his self-reflection about why the Dementors affect me and the logical and rational solution of Lupin's going to teach me the special charm to let me defend myself against them.
Yeah, that's... And then I think with Lupin's handling of Snape's handling of his class, if that makes any sense. Not mishandling, but, you know, I think he can apply that as well. Kind of his just being like, all right, whatever, you know, and keeping on going.
Yeah, and more on the side of the symbolism being about mankind. To me, it demonstrates the huge dichotomy between, like, obviously humans, witches and wizards, and the Dementors.
Oh, yeah.
Again, because everything you described about, again, humans being different by creating for the sake of creativity itself. And, like, the Dementors are just all not about that. They're about sucking every sort of happiness and creativity from you where you can't, like, do anything.
Yeah. They're just, like, little... They're not little, in my mind. They're just waves of depression.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, that's all I've got.
That's all I've got about the runes. Are always a little bit harder for me because I'm less familiar, but you do a good job of describing them.
Alrighty, and now we can move on to the final exercise, fan fiction time.
Well, I'm just going to go because I feel like we kind of touched on it. But my thought was, why didn't Harry use the invisibility cloak to get to Hogsmeade instead of the Marauder's map? I guess it just kind of, as soon as he got that map, I was like, why has he not used the invisibility cloak before then? And then, like we talked about, why didn't he use it in conjunction with the Marauder's map? I don't know, but...
Yeah. Well, I think to answer the first question, it was kind of a given that, you know, Harry did not know about these secret passageways. And so in terms of, like, even if he'd used the invisibility cloak, you know, Dumbledore already said that, like, Dementors don't see in the same way we see, and so they might catch him even under the cloak.
Right.
If he were to leave through a more official entry and exit way of Hogwarts.
I forgot that Dumbledore made mention of that, like, initially, and Ron and Harry were like, oh boy. So,
although there is something to be said of whether if the Dementor's senses are so acute that if Harry just walked with a group of students, that whether the Dementor would sense him or not, or...
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, can they just immediately sense, like, deception, or I don't know.
They're pretty scary, so I feel like their powers know no bounds. Yeah. I don't know.
So, yeah, definitely, before then, Harry didn't have a good way out of the castle that was worth risking, even with the cloak.
Yeah.
With the Marauder's map now, yeah, I don't remember, like, would have been too much of an inconvenience to, like, I can't remember the exact location of when Fred and George dropped this bomb on him and when and where exactly this statue of the One-Eyed Witch is. So I'm like, would it have been grossly inconvenient to haul himself all the way back up to Gryffindor Tower?
Maybe. The other thing that I remembered as you were talking through that was that this painting that lets them in is not functioning as usual. You know, the painting, that's a hassle too. He's got to answer God knows what password. So it would just put more time between him and, you know, his great times at Honeydukes.
Yeah, so again, the only way this logically makes sense, again, if he was pressed for time.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't, not even just invisibility cloak, doesn't get his own, like, cloak and gloves and scarf and everything, and it's like Christmas time. It's like freezing and it's snow.
Right. Yeah. That was my best fan fiction this week, but it wasn't great, but I didn't go very far. So what was yours?
Mine was, what if they really took Quidditch away from Harry?
Oh my God.
I know, right?
I know. So he obviously puts a lot of his, like, self-worth, because he can kind of claim it as his own. It's not the, oh, this is Harry Potter who survived Voldemort. It's, I'm Harry Potter and I'm good at Quidditch. So I feel like he wouldn't have needed a Dementor. He would have just been pretty depressed for a while, and probably pretty mad, I'm guess, just because I'm thinking about, you know, being a kid and whatever. Probably pretty envious of those who have been playing. Also, Wood would have been freaking out because he kind of knows that Harry's a great seeker. So I don't know. That's kind of what I think.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think because, yeah, you're absolutely right. Like, I've been thinking a lot about, you know, questions of social inequality and equity and things like that, and how specifically, whether it's the scandal, Varsity Blues scandal or whatever, like, people who are in a position of privilege, like Harry, they become so obsessed with this idea of, I need to have at least something that I can show that is purely, or at least the majority, based off of my merit.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
You know, because I acknowledge a lot of my stuff is privileged that has nothing to do with me as a person or my abilities.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that that's something that I guess I haven't framed it, thought of it that way. And what you make me think of are the Malfoys. I'm trying to think of, you know, I don't know why I wanted Draco. I can't think of Draco's, like, thing. He's a decent Quidditch player, but he's not like the creme de la creme, right?
That, yeah, that's kind of how it's described, that he's not bad, but that Harry's better.
Yeah, which I'm sure just drives Malfoy crazy. So he can't find that kind of the success and, or, you know, the self-worth in it as much as Harry. Or he's always, I mean, Malfoy's got his own problems. He's always comparing himself to Harry just because that's what he's doing. So,
But yeah, definitely I feel like, if they took Quidditch away, Harry would become even more reckless, especially in conjunction with getting the Marauder's map.
That's an excellent point. He probably would. Yeah, he would. He would be like, whatever, Dementors, I'm already depressed. Come for me.
Yeah. Because it's totally true. Because if you remove any sort of like outlet from people, like they will explode eventually.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think, you know, I guess I'm comparing myself with Harry, and I'm also thinking about an appointment I have. I have problematic ankles. So when I can't like exercise, it really drives me nuts. Now, I'm not like an accomplished athlete by any means, but it does gives me a little bit of like purpose. And when that's taken away, I know how depressed I get. So I feel you, Harry.
Like, yeah. And if someone at this point, you know, with all everything going on, were to take my podcasting away, it would not look pretty.
Right. Yeah, I know. We have to find meaning in some things. So, yeah.
Alrighty then. And that concludes chapters 9 and 10 of The Prisoner of Azkaban. Tune in next week where we will go over chapters 11 and 12, The Firebolt and The Patronus. Catch you guys later. Bye.
Bye.